This is Amarins. Hi, this is Arthur, and welcome to Amarins Podcast, Episode 64. The last time I had a chance to talk about politics was well before Christmas, before the Iowa caucuses. Well, we've gone down the road a little bit since then, so it's time to talk about it again. And joining me today is Jason. Hello, Jason.
Yep.
And hello. Also, our special guest today is Archer from Archer Radio. Hello, Archer.
Well, hello to you, too.
Well, it's been a busy time since I listed one of these political things. We've had lots of things going on. And I thought that we should probably start out by recapping a little bit where we're at. But before that, I'd like to back up even further and talk a little bit about what this process is about, because I do have a lot of listeners outside of the U.S., or who aren't even American for that matter. And essentially what this stage of it is the primary season, where each party, the Republican and the Democratic parties, try to come up with one candidate who will face each other in the November general election. And essentially that's what we're trying to do at this stage. The Democrats are voting in their primaries and caucuses to try to come up with their candidate, and the Republicans are doing the same for their party. So in a nutshell, I think that's what's going on. Now, my browser crashed. Jason, do you happen to have the current delegate totals in front of you by any chance?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good.
Which is becoming, do we want to start with the Democrats?
Oh, why not? Go with quality first, I say.
Okay. They don't tell you how many total number of delegates. Anyway, needed to nominate for the Democrats is 2025, so there must be like, 4,051 or something like that. Anyway, Clinton has 187 delegates, Obama has 89, and Edwards has 50.
Which means at this stage, Clinton has twice as many delegates as Obama.
Right. She has a lead because she has the superdelegates, which are essentially, which I found out is like a third of the total number of delegates who are essentially people of importance within the party who are usually elected officials, and they are given delegates. You know, it would be like, I'm assuming the senators of each of the states that are Democrats must be important people within the party apparatus. Mm. And so they, I guess, have surveyed those superdelegates, and that's why she has her lead. And on the Republican side, Romney has 42, Huckabee has 32, and McCain has 13, and they need 1,191 to win the nomination, so that's probably like less than 2,400, 23 and change total number of delegates.
Now, I was going to say,
we are now.
I was going to say that Hillary probably has more also, because in Michigan, when they just had the primary recently, she was running basically uncontested, right?
Yes, but Michigan isn't going to be seated at the convention, so it doesn't matter.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, they Michigan and Florida on the Democratic side, because they it's supposed to be on the Democratic side, Iowa, New Hampshire, you allow Nevada because it's a caucus state, and then you have South Carolina, which is the first southern primary, which is not this Saturday when the Republicans are, but next Saturday, whatever that's like.
The 26th, I think it is.
6th or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, the Democratic National Committee decided they wanted regional balance in their primaries and caucuses. And so when Michigan and Florida legislatures moved their primaries forward in the calendar, the Democratic National Committee retaliated by saying that the delegations to the convention would not be seated. The Republicans, of course, have had no such worries. And I personally think that it's a pretty despicable thing for the DNC to do, because the average Democratic voter is not responsible for what the legislature has done, especially in states like Florida. And I don't think it's right, and I think that they should have come up with some other solution. They should have said, we will allow it this one time, but if you do it again, this is what will happen. But that's my two cents on that. Sorry, the dog was behind me for a minute there.
It's okay. It's almost like they were disenfranchised,
exactly.
Their primary vote.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's actually what concerns me about it, because Michigan is an important state for Democrats because a lot of the so-called Reagan Democrats are in states like Michigan, and they the Democratic Party is in no position to be alienating people in those sorts of states, and I don't think anyway. So, in a nutshell, that's where we're at, which isn't very far along yet. But a lot of what's going on now is this horse race mentality in the polls where they talk about two candidates and only two candidates. For the Democrats, obviously, it's Clinton and Obama, and the Republicans, it keeps changing depending on who happens to be flavor of the day. But what concerns me about this is that a lot of what's going on are that the public opinion polls have been so wrong in so many cases. And would either of you like to chime in about that, about why that might be, or the implications of that, anything like that?
Well, I'm not sure why it's happening, but I would say that what has a lot to do with it is the media. It seems like the big CBS, NBC, ABC, so forth, have so much to do with what's being reported that I think they have a lot of control over, what polls we're hearing about.
Yeah.
Well, I also think it's easy.
Yes.
This is relatively easy. It doesn't take much time. You have this research firm, and then you can talk about the polls, and then you sort of create your own news. The New Hampshire, when they got egg on their face, is on, the Democratic side where, essentially they were writing Hillary's obituary. And I think, whether or not they say, oh, well, we're going to take stock, I really don't think they will take stock. But it was truly amazing to see what unfolded, where essentially, to really sort of sum it all up, there was an article written in the Post, which appeared in the Tuesday of the New Hampshire primary. So it was written Monday night, and it was talking about, I didn't see it, I saw the headline, and I didn't get to read it, but it was an opinion piece, and it was about how Hillary could gracefully withdraw after she lost. I was thinking, like, don't people need to vote first?
Yeah, it's like, don't put the cart before the horse.
This small little thing, and I think what happened, I think it could be summed up by this woman that they interviewed was on a couple of stations. I think it was ABC. Who she says, well, I'm a Republican. I don't particularly, I wouldn't support her and don't support her politics. But she said, you go, girl. And I think what happened was they had a huge swing in the women's vote because of a series of events, which just looked like all the talking heads, who are 95%+ men, were piling on her and are essentially. Yeah. Digging her, dancing on her grave. It was almost obscene to watch. It was like, and her career's over, and yeah. It's like, well, no.
They did seem like they were way too clever for their own good, the talking heads. I think that there's a couple of different things going on here. One are problems with the polls themselves, but the other is that the news media doesn't understand polls and statistics, and so they misreport what is going on. But first, with the polls themselves, one of the problems is that a lot of them are conducted only by telephone, which doesn't count people who have only cell phones, which is
they're doing some by cell phone now.
They may be doing some, but not as many as they do with landlines, and that's a major problem, particularly for poor voters who may only have cell phones, like prepays and so on, and also for mm-hmm. younger and more tech savvy voters as well, who would not be counted. That's one.
You don't have landlines anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because many people don't. In fact, I've got friends who have only cell phones. Many friends in the U.S. And so there's a structural problem with the polls, and very often the sample is too small to have any really meaningful results. I mean, you see a margin of error of 4.5% or more, which means it's not terribly accurate. It's not terribly reliable.
But
the other thing I was going to say was about the media itself, because they report these polls as if it's a foregone conclusion. And I don't know if you read This Boy Elroy, but Adam was talking about, I think it was a Nevada poll that was saying that, I think it was saying that Obama was ahead. I've forgotten who it was saying that, frankly. It doesn't really matter, because he was pointing out that it was like 37% for one and 34% for the other, and the margin of error was 4.5%, which mm-hmm. clearly indicates that no one is
ahead. It's a dead heat, right?
Yeah, it's a dead heat. There's no such thing as a statistical tie, but clearly no one is ahead.
Right.
What they used to do was they used to announce, they used to say, oh, it's plus or minus, and it's, now it's boom, it's here's what it is. And in some cases, they don't even list it. There's this sort of tracking poll on the Washington Post site for, you know, like the South, sort of the upcoming primaries, and the one in South Carolina, and, you know, for the Republicans, it's like, McCain has 26.4%, Huckabee has 23%, Romney's 14.8%, and Thompson, and, you know, so on. Well, there's no sort of way to, it's also kind of hard to tell exactly when it, what it's from. I guess it's from this Real Clear Politics, this poll of polls, so I think it's their aggregate average of stuff. Mm. But in a lot of cases, they don't even tell you what, I mean, this thing in South Carolina is this statistical dead heat, and Mr. Huckabee, I guess, is now appealing to the old Confederacy voters because he made some comment about the Confederate flag, which harkens back to what happened with John McCain in South Carolina 8 years ago. It's like, oh, very interesting. But again, I think the problem with polls is that obviously in this, Romney is at like 15%. Okay, so he's way behind the other two candidates. You could say, you know, I mean, it might be, you know, he's like almost, what, 8% behind Huckabee? So you could figure, okay, he's behind him. There's enough of a gap that you can say for sure he's in third place, you know, and unless something really amazing happens, he's probably going to remain in third place. But when you have stuff that's like within a couple percentage points, it's a dead heat.
Hmm. Yeah, you really can't claim who's going to be first and second. I think it also has, I really think it, a large portion of it has to do with the sample size. I think for the most part, they only call like 1,000 people for their polling, and that is, I don't think that's a large enough representative.
It's sometimes even less than that. Well, the problem is that they have to continually do them.
Yeah.
You know,
and quickly.
Here's the latest poll. They're doing them like two or three times a week.
Yeah, they don't.
But I'm saying is you can't rely on that small of a sample.
Oh, no.
When clearly there's so many more people who will actually go out and vote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if the media doesn't report the full results, they also never report the sample size and how the poll was conducted. So there's really no way for even a statistically savvy news consumer to be able to evaluate the polls because we don't have all the information.
Right.
Which is a bit of a problem.
And now, of course, they're running these national polls, which are just totally meaningless.
Yeah.
You know, Huckabee's up one week, and then John McCain's up the next, and it's more name recognition or the amount of press. Who's gotten the most press? I mean, it's totally meaningless. Here's Obama versus Huckabee, or, oh, they would run well. It's meaningless. It's meaningless until you really get down to the two nominees.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have these national polls. It's like, you know.
Well, actually, in a roundabout sort of way, that leads into the huge contest that's coming up, Super Tuesday, which some people have called a national primary because there's so many states that are taking part in that. Because these same the same pundits who were predicting these same pundits who were predicting the other races are now saying that it's the whole thing's going to be all over on that day.
Yeah.
But, you know, the predictions were wrong in Iowa and New Hampshire, so I'm not so convinced they're going to be right on Super Tuesday either.
Iowa they were right on. I think people are becoming more and more to the notion that it's not going to be over.
Hmm.
As some media outlets call it, Tsunami Tuesday. Because
I was going to say, isn't there another big primary day in March, too?
There's 24 on February 5th.
Good grief.
There's not a whole lot left after that.
After that,
let's see. Here's my. We actually might matter, because the district, Maryland and Virginia are all on the same day. That's February 12th. On March 4th. Well, Ohio, Rhode Island, Texas, and Vermont. So all Ohio and Texas. But the thing is, you could certainly on the Democratic side, you're going to have three candidates. On the Republican side, you could have four candidates. And you've got, you know, the contests are scattered all over the country on Super Tuesday. You know, it's New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts. There's West Virginia. There's Georgia. There's Tennessee. There's Illinois. There's Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, Colorado, Utah, Alaska, Arizona, California. And then there are a couple other, I think. And so they're all over the country. So it's possible that, well, you know, one would assume Huckabee's going to be in the race. He would probably do well in Georgia and Alabama and Arkansas.
Mississippi.
And Oklahoma. And Giuliani could do well in New York and California. And I was just sort of thinking about it, and I did a post on this, that if you wouldn't necessarily have to win a state as long as you came in second in enough of them, and close enough second, because it's delegates now. I think people thought it would be down to one or, you know, like two candidates, and that this would decide it. I don't think anyone thought that there would be four viable candidates. Well, Giuliani's still a question mark if he does well enough.
Yeah, because he needs to win something before for him to be still in it.
But certainly, say he's out, I don't think that that's realistic, because Florida's the 29th and Super Tuesday's the next Tuesday, so I think he could stay in there. So you divide all this stuff up, so you've had 26, 27 contests, and you wouldn't even necessarily have someone who you could say would be a front runner. It would all be on delegate counts. And now there's this sort of whispering, oh, well, maybe there'll be a brokered convention, which I don't think will happen, but...
Well, it could, though. I mean, the trends continue.
Right.
You know, if if people run strongly in the region sort of where they're from, but then poorly everywhere else, you know, like, say, Huckabee comes in first in some of the southern primaries, but in the mid-Atlantic primaries, yeah, he's coming in fourth. That, and then like McCain and Giuliani split as one and two, or maybe Romney come, you know, it's very possible that you don't have anybody with the commanding lead after that.
So
I think the assumption was that it would be over, but it could go on.
So then at the convention, they would be fighting for each other's delegates. So it could be a brokered convention, right?
Right. But we haven't had one of those. The last time for the Democrats was 1952 for Adlai Stevenson, and the Republicans, I think it was in the 40s. 40 or 44. I don't remember which. I read something about it in USA Today earlier.
I was going to say, I just think that it would be fun to watch that if it actually happens, since it hasn't happened in my lifetime.
They might actually broadcast the convention on TV if that's the case.
Well, they usually broadcast the big parts of the conventions on TV.
Yeah. I remember when they used to boast gavel-to-gavel coverage, and they stopped doing that because nobody was watching.
Yeah.
Well, nobody was watching, and it's not really news. It's all scripted. You know, when you really, really think about it, it's like a gigantic infomercial for, you know, the Republicans
and
the Democrats.
Yeah, it
right,
is.
You know. And if you call in the next 25 minutes...
You'll get a presidential candidate.
Right.
And act now, and we'll throw in a vice president for free. Yeah.
So it should be really interesting. It should be really interesting to see. Part of the thing that you have to find out is if they have winner-take-all primaries and what that involves, because that would be... Because then it doesn't make any difference. Because for a while... California on, I think, the Democratic side was a winner-take-all primary.
Yeah,
I think it's that way in Virginia, isn't it?
Well, I'm looking at this Real Clear Politics thing, and according in the Florida primary, they have it's winner-take-all. So the person who wins it will get 57 delegates. No wonder Giuliani was so interested in getting that. I don't see.
Well, personally, I think that winner-take-all primaries are a dumb idea, but the system that's used in Illinois on Super Tuesday is equally as bad, but for different reasons. Illinois has two elections for president on the primary. The first one is often called beauty contest, where you select the candidate that you like, and it's essentially just a poll that's conducted by the election authorities. The election that matters is the one for delegates, and you vote for them and alternates separately. Now, here's the thing.
Oh, they're still doing that stupid
They are.
Thing.
It is incredibly stupid. And I don't know if any other state has as asinine a way of doing things as Illinois does. But assuming that it doesn't, that makes Illinois the worst system in the country.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
It is just dumb. So I got my ballot. As an overseas voter, I get it really quite early so that I can get it back. And on the of course, it's a Democratic primary ballot, and there were all of the candidates for president. You know,
even the ones who have dropped out since?
Oh, yeah, because it had been printed already. So even ones that had dropped out, because it was sent out in December sometime.
Oh, okay.
Late December.
You can't vote. You could even vote for Mike Gravel. Well, that's really great.
You could vote for anybody, or anybody at the time. Anybody who had qualified for the Illinois ballot, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I, as an overseas voter, I cast a federal ballot, which means I can vote for president, and obviously later on vice president, U.S. Senator and U.S. Representative for the congressional district where I was last registered, which is I think it's still the 9th congressional district in Illinois. It's the north side of Chicago, basically, and it's currently represented by Jan Schakowsky. And in that congressional, what happens is that the delegates are, they run in each congressional district. And in that congressional district, there were slates of candidates for Clinton and slates of candidates for Obama, and that was it. So if you didn't like Clinton or Obama, you've got no delegates to vote for. And you're essentially throwing away your vote in the beauty contest.
Wow.
It's really stupid.
Why do they do that? Why can't you vote for Edwards? I mean,
well,
I don't understand that.
You can in the beauty contest, but it won't have any effect on anything. Although I think the Democrats, they have a certain amount of delegates, I think. This could have changed, but it used to be that they would have set aside, and whoever won the beauty contest would get those delegates.
Right.
I don't think they were apportioned. I think it was a winner-take-all for them. That could have changed. I honestly don't know that part. But I found that incredibly frustrating. So I'm looking at these delegates, and I will make a announcement. I should have one of those breaking news sounds. Yeah, the breaking news sound is in memory of the Little Fatty Cast. I voted for John Edwards in the beauty contest. And when it came to the delegates, since there were no Edwards delegates, I only voted for one, and that's a gay politician in Chicago who I actually have met, who I believe was a Clinton delegate. Might have been an Obama delegate. I can't remember, to be honest. Doesn't matter to me because I wasn't voting for that candidate. I was voting for the delegate.
Right.
And the senator, Dick Durbin, is running unopposed in the Democratic primary, and Jan Schakowsky was opposed, but obviously I voted for her. Because she's probably the leading opponent of Blackwater in Congress, which scores big points with me.
Yeah.
But I as a voter, as a Democratic voter, and just I was really frustrated by that because the Edwards campaign didn't have a full slate of delegates in my congressional district, I essentially was disenfranchised. I mean, I could say I want Edwards to win the Illinois primary. But because I can't vote for any delegates for him, that means that he's not going to end up with the majority of delegates from Illinois. And I just think that's stupid.
Yeah.
Well, now, when it comes time for the general election and you get your ballot and it has, let's just say, I don't know, Giuliani and Clinton on there, will you go ahead and vote for Clinton or will you just not vote at all?
No, in that case, I will vote for the Democratic nominee, whoever that is.
Okay.
When that time rolls around. Because there is no way I would vote for any of those Republicans. This is me personally, of course. I don't like any of them, and I can't imagine voting for any of them. It's just that in the primaries, because you both have probably heard me talk about it, and I've certainly blogged about it, I have agonized over who to vote for in the Illinois primary.
Yeah.
Because I don't trust any of the politicians of either party, truth be known. But what it came down to for me, I suppose this is amounting to a campaign pitch now, but it's not authorized by any candidate. what it came down to for me was of the candidates that I distrust Obama and Clinton more than I do Edwards. And he's also the only candidate who's talking about the real threat to American democracy, which is corporate power. And I felt that he deserved my vote because of that, even though it ultimately was meaningless because he has no delegates that I could vote for.
Right.
I felt I needed to stand by my principles because I think that Hillary Clinton is in the back seat of the big corporations. I don't know enough about Obama to know if he is or not, but that's part of the problem. I don't know anything about him. I can't. He is one of the most eloquent speakers on the campaign trail, Obama, when he wants to be, but he says nothing. Hillary says a lot. But not anything I want to hear.
I think what I find interesting is I was thinking about this, and I was trying to come up with the way of sort of, you know, change. And I've listened to a couple of his speeches. You know, the speech after Iowa win was unbelievable and amazing and incredibly uplifting. But, you know, this change. And I'm thinking, what bothers about me? You know, and I came up with sort of an analogy. You go into a bank, you have a $20 bill, you go up to the teller and say, I'd like some change. And they say, oh, two tens? And I say, no, I want a 10, a 5, 4 ones, and 4 quarters. That's my idea of change for 20. What's yours? And that's my problem. Yeah, well, what's change?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't you think you could go to 100 different people and say, how do we change this country? And you might get like 100 different answers.
Easily.
Maybe not 100, but, you know, a lot of different answers. And, and you know, he talks about, you know, and we're going to bring everybody together and remember our great uniter, not a divider, who now sits in the White House, and how well of a job he did at that.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks at it, doesn't he?
So he sure
what
does.
Is that? And the positions that I've read about are fairly straightforward, sort of mainline liberal democratic ideas. How do you bring the Republicans in? And some of the rhetoric out of his campaign, which I found a little annoying, was, you know, and there'll be those naysayers and doubters and cynics. It's like, well, I'm not a naysayer or a doubter. I'm just saying, how are you going to do this?
Yeah.
I don't think it's wrong to say, okay, change what? Change it how? How do you change the tone?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is I don't know that they even, well, I'm sure they do realize it, but they don't have that great of a, the ability to make the change. It's Congress making the change.
Yeah.
When it comes to the laws and changing things like that, I mean, they can help with the attitude or the tone, but I think for the most part, it's Congress who makes the change.
Not according to our current president.
Well, that's true.
To our current president, you know. Well, they also need, if the notion of change is going to take place, that which you sort of alluded to by Obama and, well, everybody now, you know, you, at least on the Democratic side, you need a lot more people who are Democrats in Congress in order to do it. The reason they weren't able to do what they wanted to do, their big long agenda, especially with Iraq, because they didn't have the votes.
Yeah.
They didn't have a significant enough... majority.
Yeah. But that's another important thing, actually, because when people go to the polls, we're talking more November now, but even in the primaries, they have to vote for real Democrats, because there are a whole bunch of these people now. They're sometimes called blue dog Democrats, and I call them Republican light, because they're essentially Republican in all but extremes. They vote with Republicans more often than not. They're conservative on social issues. They're often conservative on fiscal issues. And it's only a couple of issues here and there where they're actually true Democrats. And as a Democratic voter, I find that offensive. Like the guy from Virginia, whatever his name is, I can't remember his name. The guy who was just elected in the last election.
Jim Webb.
Yeah.
I think you're thinking of Jim Webb.
He's not a real Democrat. And the main guy who is behind all this is Rahm Emanuel, who is a congressman from Illinois now. He's in Dan Rostenkowski's old district. And I can't stand that man, because what his vision is to elect Democrats at any cost. And any cost meaning core Democratic principles, core principles of the Democratic Party. I mean, you know, big deal.
Well, in defense of Jim Webb, he defeated George Allen.
True.
So,
That was a service to the nation.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I don't really care anything else as long as he got rid of George Allen.
But see, there's the flip side of that as well. There are the Republicans who are in the Northeast and to a certain extent in the Midwest who really should be Democrats.
Yes.
Christopher Shea, who's in Connecticut, Olympia Snow, who's in Maine, and I have a feeling she probably won't lose, but I have a feeling that they're going to be swept away, that they shouldn't be Republicans.
But that actually touches on something that I wanted to talk about as well. And essentially what it is that there seems to be a battle that's brewing in the Republican Party for the heart and soul of the party, because there's some of those people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Some of the people that you're talking about who are basically Democrats or ought to be for their own sanity, probably, are people who are extremely angry at the direction the party has taken. Because prior to Reagan, they talked about all of this big tent thing, how you could have abortion opponents and abortion rights supporters all in the same party, and
we
all that kind of thing.
Talked about the big tent when George's father ran.
Yeah.
It was since Reagan as well.
Oh, yeah. But what I was getting at is that that's long gone now, and there's an ideological litmus test you have to pass. You have to be anti-gay, you have to be anti-abortion, you have to be for so-called strict constructionist judges, which means that they only rule in favor of conservative causes and against liberal and progressive causes, those kinds of things. And there's...
Well, couldn't you just as easily say that the Democratic Party is the exact same way, only the flip on those issues?
No, because...
You could for the most part.
Well, you could. They are the opposite on those issues, you're right. But there isn't the litmus test because Democrats believe in political correctness and they don't want to correct anybody. No, but what I was going to get at, basically, was something that Christine Todd Whitman, who used to be a Bush official, not a very good one, as I recall... And
that's why they got rid of her.
Yes, and before that she was governor of something. Where's she governor of?
New Jersey.
New Jersey, that's right. Mm-hmm. But just before the Iowa caucus, she said something that I thought was actually pretty remarkable. And I happen to have the quote handy, so I'm going to go ahead and read that. She said, "We can be moderate, conservative, liberal, as long as we agree on the basic fundamental principles that make us Republicans. You can disagree with someone and not hate them. That's where we need to get, so that we can have the kind of campaigns at the federal level that actually talk about the important issues and try to solve them instead of trying to outflank each other, instead of outflank the other person, I'm more conservative than you are." Now, what I thought was remarkable about that is because she basically admitted that the different factions of the Republican Party actually hate each other, which I think is a fair assessment, because there's no way that Christian Republicans, far-right Christian Republicans, are going to get along with somebody like her or Olympia Snow, or somebody like that.
Our members who are part of the Chamber of Commerce. Yeah. This dates back to, and I will blame Newt Gingrich for this scorched earth policy of, the Republicans are going to regain Congress and we're going to say whatever we need to do it. And he had this rather disingenuous thing when he said, "Oh, I can't believe people are so cynical about politics." Really, Newt? Why is that?
Yeah.
And the idea is, let's make the person despicable. Oh, you know Joe Smith, that child molester, or Fred, he likes cherries, and what people who like cherries, we all know what they're like. And if you can demonize the person or demonize the side, the conservatives do this, and I have to admit, the liberals do it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Then you don't have to listen to any of their arguments. And on both sides, there are people who are nutcases.
Yeah.
But that sometimes there are people who are saying, this is my opinion, this is my view, and they should have the right to say that. They shouldn't have the right to that opinion, and they shouldn't be demonized, because sometimes what they're saying is somewhat true. It's this notion of, you have to agree with. It would be like having a friend who said, "You have to agree with every single thing I say." How long would that person be your friend?
Yeah,
and that's the problem, and that's and like I said, on both sides of the spectrum, there are people who are nuts, who are just like, "Well, yes, I'm going back to the real world now. Have a nice time in Neverland." But if you can demonize that person, sort of what comes to mind really sort of quickly is sort of like affirmative action and people who have questions about affirmative action. Well, they're anti-black. Well, maybe they have questions about affirmative action. It's sort of like, again, this thing with Obama and change. And, they'll be their naysayers. Well, you have to allow people to ask questions about it, or maybe they don't understand it, or maybe they think it's unfair or something. And it doesn't mean that they're bad, terrible people. Some of them are. You've got to recognize that on both sides. But sometimes it's like, this doesn't seem correct to me. This doesn't seem right.
Hmm.
And we've gotten away from that.
We've
gotten away also from, at the end of the day, the politicians going shaking hands and going out and having a beer. completely gone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that some of what you were talking about basically the polarization that's going on, you can see that on the Democratic side as well. The fact that the top three contenders on the Democratic side, for example, Clinton, Obama, and Edwards, none of them are in favor of same-sex marriage. They all say civil unions instead of same-sex marriage. Well, when they started saying that, a lot of the gay left was saying, oh, they're homophobic. They're homophobic because they won't support gay marriage.
Right.
Although they're willing to overlook Obama's opposition and Clinton's opposition because they're because he's African American and she's a woman, but they won't overlook Edwards' opposition because he's a white male, in my opinion.
Well, and they also went after when this thing came up about that issue, and when they sort of went after these I don't remember who it was, but it was the head of a pretty prominent it was an African American church, and it's like, oh well, you know, he's homophobic, and you looked at all of the other positions he took on equal rights and equal treatment of people across the board, gay, straight, women, minorities, and you go, how could you possibly say that about this person? You know, there is just absolutely no way. When, especially in one of the statements, he says, you know, I don't think gays should be discriminated against in the workplace. I don't think gays should be discriminated against in their ability to housing or in any other thing. It's just, I have a problem with sanctioning gay marriage, you know, and I think he went for civil unions are okay, but I'm thinking like, and they bashed this guy. It was just like, well, what is your problem here?
Mm.
You know, and also the sort of shrillness of the reaction. I would think like, you know, if I was someone who was undecided on this issue, for instance, in this issue it's gay marriage, but it could be any issue. When someone, this seems to be a sort of moderate kind of okay position, I would go, his stuff seems to be pretty, you know, moderate here.
Mm.
So that's,
he might also understand, you know, that things occur in steps. We don't get everything right off the bat. You have to work up to
well,
it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I, and the subject of marriage, I've always said that for me personally, what mattered was having the rights and privileges of marriage. I don't give a damn what it's called. I just want to have the same. I want to have legal equality. And that's what the prize is. It's not the word marriage. It's legal equality.
Right, and that's what I agree with that too. I want all the legal ramifications that straight married people want, but I don't care what we call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the semantics,
and
if you, I think on this issue and on many other issues, you know, like affirmative action, it comes to mind that a lot of people don't. It doesn't affect their world, and they sort of don't have an opinion sort of one way or the other. But if you sort of have this dogma of this is what it is, it's sort of like someone shaking their finger in your face and, you know, you're wrong. And we all know that when that happens, we all go back and think, well, yes, of course I'm wrong. No, you know, you point back with another finger and that's what you're giving them. And so I don't see, if you're trying to influence people who haven't thought one way or the other, you've got to be really careful.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and it, you know, there are, we know who these people, the people who are against this stuff and who are, as I like to say, knuckle walking bigots. but there are people who have sort of legitimate concerns, and we've got to respect that, and we don't do that anymore. And I think it's one of the reasons why we're so screwed up as we are. We don't seem to be able to get anything done because everybody talks and nobody listens.
Well, they more likely scream rather than talk.
Well, yes.
So let me ask you a question.
To see what happens.
Did you see, I don't know if you saw this yet in New Zealand, Arthur, but did you see that Nevada, there was a judge in Nevada saying that the hotel workers could caucus in their places of business?
Yes, I did see that. And the casinos on the strip.
Right.
Yeah.
That's going to be a good boost for Barack Obama this weekend, I think.
Yeah, because the unions have endorsed him, the service workers' unions.
Well, that's if they show up. I do think someone was saying it is sort of a caucus is sort of an unfair process because if someone works at night, they can't participate in it.
Mm.
It's, you know, it's a very involved process. It's several hours out of your day, as opposed to you know, 20 minutes or half an hour standing in line to vote, and you could probably vote, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12 hours out of the day. So it's I've always thought them not to be as democratic, or democratic with a small d, as they should be. You know, it seems to me that that's a lot of time.
That's true, but I guess I look at it in that, in the general election, when we actually really need them, not that we don't need them for a primary, I mean, or a caucus, they'll be able to vote when the vote is really, really needed.
When it really matters.
Right, when it really matters.
Well, one hopes.
Well, you could say it matters to help choose the candidate that you want, yes, but I think ultimately they will have the chance to vote in the general election.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
And a lot of the resistance to the primary process in a lot of states, like Illinois, for instance, is that people have to declare a preference when they go to vote. You can have either Republican or Democratic ballot; it doesn't matter. But you do have to ask for one or the other. Whereas in some states, you're given both of them, and you vote whichever one you want. You can only vote one or the other, which is seems to be a better way of doing it because it's more anonymous. But the parties hate that because they lose control over the process then.
Well, in D.C., you've got to declare your party.
Yeah, well, in some places you have to register as a member of one party or the other as well, which turns a lot of people off. Because, I mean, I can't count the number of times when I was doing electoral politics in Illinois when I heard people say, well, I don't want to declare myself. And I would say, well, it doesn't matter. You can vote any way you want in the general election. And next primary, you can vote in the other party if you want. It's just to get this person nominated. And they say, oh, no, I don't want to declare myself. So it sort of discourages participation from people who aren't a strong party identifier and overrepresents the party activists. For the Republicans, the far right, and for the Democrats, very often the far left.
Well, if you actually had more participation.
Absolutely.
Especially at the primary level, like in the 70s or in the 80s when sort of like single issues started to come out and people were saying, well, they'll all be single issue candidates. And what happened was they weren't single issue candidates, they became single constituent candidates. And if you can get your constituency out, and if you know they'll participate, and you know only 30% of the people are going to bother to show up, you have a chance of winning. Where if you had 50, 60, 70% of the people voting in primaries, they'd have to widen their appeal. Or they could keep the way they are, but they'd lose.
Although you don't get that many in a general election. So.
Well,
no, but I think it's safe to say that in the primaries so far, a huge number of Democrats have come out this time that weren't out at the last time.
Oh, it's been huge. And I would think, well, the Republican turnout was higher in Iowa than last time in the last contested election, which was 2000, and I guess in New Hampshire. But I would think they would have to be very concerned about the number of people that showed up in the Iowa caucuses and the number of independents in New Hampshire who went over and voted in the Democratic primary. It's turnout is the key, I think, the Republicans. I mean, the Republicans are not, there's no enthusiasm for these people except, you know, the very core constituencies. And it's the longer it lasts when they don't sort of unite around a candidate, I think for the Republicans, the harder it's going to be, because they seem,
well,
you know, like in your statement from Whitman, there seems to be this internal dissension. It's like the Republicans have become the Democrats, and the Democrats have become the Republicans.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing too is that I was going to say, these Republicans who feel that way are like they can't connect to a candidate. They're the ones who end up staying home on election day.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, I mean, it must be really hard for the Republicans, too, because they have a colossally unpopular president, an unpopular war, which is a Republican creation, and they don't have anything to run on. They can't run against their president or their doings, because then that would be to admit that they all made mistakes, and they can't do that. So they can't run against the establishment. They can't run for change, because that would mean, the same thing, admitting mistakes.
Washington's broken.
Yeah, so I mean,
Washington's broken.
Yeah, but that isn't going to play with people, because they know that, and they know it's the Republicans' fault. So,
well, they won't do it outwardly, but they will secretly vote for the Democrats when they get into the ballot.
Oh, yeah,
box.
No, I meant the candidates couldn't run.
I hope
against
so.
Oh, yeah.
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 Hope so.
At least that's what I'm hoping.
Well, a lot of it will come down to, in the end, who ends up being the various nominees for the two sides. Because, I mean, there's still a lot of talk about how Hillary is supposed to be unelectable, and how, what is it? What's they always call it? Divisive. And Obama has all of these dark secrets and things, and oh, please.
That's all that rumor stuff that I don't know that many people really believe it.
I would hope not.
Well, the thing is that she's been vetted, and people have made up their minds about her.
Yeah.
He really hasn't been, and it's sort of a wait-and-see type, you know, attitude. And this notion of, you know, high negatives, Romney's negatives are huge. I mean, if Romney was the nominee, he has a huge problem with one of the main core constituency of the Republican Party, and that's the born-agains, the religious right, the fundamentalists, whatever you want to call the...
The evangelicals.
Yes, the evangelicals, and he has a huge problem with them.
Yeah, some of them have talked openly about having a third-party candidate if he's the Republican nominee.
Oh, I would love that.
I don't think that'll happen. I just think they'll...
I don't think they'd be that dumb.
They'll stay home, but, you know, one of the things was after his, you know, religion speech about how one of... I don't remember who it was, televangelist or something, says, you know, he's trying to pass himself off as a Christian, and he's not. And his Mormonism is a huge thing with them.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a huge percentage within the Republican Party who say that they will not vote for him under any circumstances because he's a Mormon.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't vote for him because he looks like a used car salesman.
And talks like one, too.
He does, you're right.
Like a gigantic Ken doll, or you sort of wonder, what does your portrait look like that's up in your attic, Mr. Romney? I mean, I think they have problems. You know, I think Iraq will take center stage again, and I mean, the economy is just like, what's the old phrase, going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, now George is promoting more tax cuts for the rich as a solution.
Yeah, I saw
Actually,
that.
He's not.
Well, that's what
he's not talking about. Excuse me. He's not talking about making his tax cuts permanent. What they'll probably do is what they did in 2001, and people will get a $300 or $400 check.
Hmm.
Some sort of,
and they're just hoping that they'll spend it in the next 2 months.
Well, the problem is that it's just beginning, and for people, this is I don't know. Somebody was saying that, you know, if you talk about a recession often enough, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Hmm. That's
true. Know, because people are, oh, I'm worried, I'm concerned, I won't spend. So that adds to the problem, and then people go, oh, I'm worried, I'm concerned, and they don't spend.
Yeah.
And so you have to change. You know, I always find it amusing, they get on these experts on Wall Street, well, it's this, it's this, it's that, it's this reason. It's like, no, they're a bunch of lemmings, and they're jumping off the cliff. You know? I mean, it's all psychology driven, and you know, it's this notion of, well, the earnings of this were such and such, or they expected that the Fed would do this, but it didn't come in, it wasn't enough, and you just go, it's all psychology. It really, really is. You know, the what was Alan Greenspan's something exuberance? I can't remember what he said, but this is, you know, whatever this is. Unbelievable pessimism. And if you think about it, and if you're invested in the market, like through your 401k, this isn't a bad thing to have happen, because it means your money buys you more stuff.
Yeah.
So that when it eventually goes back up, but it's kind of a we'll see. But they're going to act quickly, you know, in the next month or so. And so probably by tax time or a little later, people would get checks. And I think that's too late. That would be too late to really, by the time the election rolled around, to see any sort of an impact.
Yeah.
But that'll be good for the Democrats, because then the Democrats can use that and say, look what's happened to the Republicans. We've gone into a recession, and now you really do need change.
Yeah.
Whatever, however you define that.
Yeah.
Well, this has been really good, catching up on where we're at, and as we sort of narrow in on South Carolina for the Republicans is next, I guess.
Yes.
Actually, the Democrats, too.
And then Nevada Saturday as well, right? Yeah.
Right.
And South Carolina for the Democrats is next Saturday, and then the 29th is Florida, and then Tsunami Tuesday. I like that better than Super Tuesday.
Yeah, Super Tuesday sounds like a combo meal at McDonald's or something.
Yeah.
Taco Bell.
Tsunami Tuesday probably isn't PC, but yeah, I like that. It just has a ring to it.
Well, we'll have to do another catch-up before Tsunami Tuesday and see where things have shaken out by then, and maybe things will be a bit clearer as we get a bit closer.
Go Ron Paul.
Yeah, right. Although I saw lots of signs for him in Lake Zurich, Illinois.
When you're driving. Oh, there's signs all over my area, too.
Yeah, well.
Oh, talk about... Oh, you read his stuff and go, oh, this really is a fairy tale.
Although, the one thing I have to say in his defense, and this will be the only time you'll hear me say anything positive about Ron Paul, is that he introduced a bill to repeal the Military Commissions Act, or whatever it was called, the one that repealed habeas corpus and the Posse Comitatus Act, essentially, basically gave George Bush unlimited power. Mm. And anybody who does that isn't all bad, regardless of his motivations.
That's true.
Yeah.
But true. I'll just wrap this up for today, then, and thank you both for joining me today. And why don't you both take a couple seconds and say about Jason about your blog and Archer about your podcast. Jason, how about you first?
Okay, you can read all my wonderful musings at jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com.
Very good.
That's where I am.
And Archer?
And I am Archer from archerradio.com. I put out a daily podcast just about me and what's going on.
And I always have links to both of those on my blog, and I'll put them in the show notes as well. But I read Jason's blog regularly whenever he posts, and I listen to Archer's show every day. Although I haven't had a chance to listen to the group show and your New Hampshire primary show. But apart from that, I'm current.
Well, I think you'll enjoy both of those when you do listen to them.
Yes. Well, I heard the part one of the other one last night. Was it last night? Last night, my time. Yeah. Boy, they give you a lot of hassle, don't they?
They do, but I love it. It's fun.
Yes, well, I hope to be back on the group show in the beginning of February.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, well, again, thank you very much for joining me, and we'll do this again.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. And that's it for this edition of the Amerinds Podcast. Thanks to both Jason and Archer for being with me today. Please leave a comment on my blog, amerinds.com, or you can send an email to me at amerinds@yahoo.com. And, of course, you can ring my U.S. listener line, which is 206-339-8413. I now have iTunes reviews in Australia and Germany, as well as the U.S. Have you left your review yet? Thanks, everybody. I'll be back on Tuesday, just me, and I'll also go over comments at that time. But I hope you have a great weekend, and I'll see you again on Tuesday. Bye.